We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Want to put your baseball skills to the test? Then get ready to show your stuff with MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run. The official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Sign up for free for a chance to play your way to the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 World Series. Visit pitchhitrun.com today.
The Dan Bernstein Show. Weekdays 9 a.m. to noon on Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Phil said, forcefully, Paxson is open. Get him the ball. And I started looking for Paxson.
Everybody, in the world's expecting Jordan to force something through a double team. He doesn't do it. He draws and dishes. He trusts his teammate to make the shot.
Once Pax hits that first shot, he says, okay, fine. Let me do this again. Penetrate, find Pax. And he just kept hitting him.
That was exactly what Phil was trying to get Michael to understand and believe in over the couple years, is that, hey, these other guys can help you out.
We've got one of those other guys sitting alongside today in Will Perdue, and we can have a conversation with another former Jordan teammate on the Chicago Bulls. I'm Dan Bernstein, and you've got Sports Radio 670. We're joined now by Scott Williams, who is on Twitter at ScottWill42. He's on the Alpamonte Ford hotline. Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. Hello, Scott. How you doing?
Guys, I want to say that is some great walk-up music you just played there for me. That's got me hyped. The tank is filled up on a second cup of coffee, and I am ready to roll. And another thing, that downtown Evanston businesses, I used to get my hair cut in Evanston back when I had hair, so this is going to be a really good time for me to come on. I really enjoyed my time in Chicago, the people there. I met my wife there. I still got brother-in-law Keith Hassel and Mark Michelson there. My father and mother-in-law there, Bert and Bev McGrady. Please send one up for him. He's having brain surgery this week back in Chicago. So I got to get those shout-outs to all my peeps back in Chicago. But you guys did me no favor in bringing me in after a legend like Andrea Kramer. Come on, man. How did I live up to that? Your show's about to drop off here in the last hour.
Nah. What are you enjoying most about, what did you enjoy most about The Last Dance?
It was great to relive the moments. I wasn't in the doc like Will. I'm a little jelly of Will, you being in the document, like docu-series, I guess they're calling it. But being able to see myself on the court, reliving those times back when I was 20 in good shape and winning those championships and the fist pumps, the celebration, the jubilation, the shrug game. A lot of people forget I had 12 in the shrug game. Yeah, I was overshadowed by Jordan that one, just by a little bit. But just, letting my kids enjoy that with them. I had my kids late in my career. They kind of don't understand what the fuss was all about with the 90s Bulls and his championships in Chicago and Michael Jordan. I think they're kind of getting a little bit of a taste for that, of how special he was to the NBA and basketball on a global level. In fact, my son is asking me for some of these old sweats we used to wear back in the day. But Dad, you still got that white home sweatsuit that you had on in the Last Dance? I'm like, oh yeah, it's probably in a cardboard box someplace.
You had a relationship with Michael Jordan that was a little different than perhaps some of your teammates were. Was the North Carolina connection a real thing? Because it always seemed to be for Michael.
Oh, yeah, most definitely, without a doubt. In fact, I'm probably 100% sure now I don't end up in Chicago without Michael Jordan making a call for me after a pickup game we played in Greensboro where I was a teammate of his. I found him on the baseline late in the game, and he knocked down a jump shot to give us a 1-point victory when we were down one. So I impressed him just enough in that game. I think he makes a call to Krause because he thinks I can help, but also because I'm a former Carolina Tar Heel that wasn't drafted, kind of down on his luck, and allowed me to get an opportunity to try out for the rookie team. I didn't get a chance to come to veterans. I had to try out just to get an invitation to the rookie summer league. And I don't know if you guys remember back then. I'm sure you do, Will, but summer league was nothing. We played a little hot box at Loyola Marymount, no television. I don't even think they sold tickets. I think if you wanted to come, you could just walk right in. So it was a different time. But, everything that I owe to, all the success that I had, of course, in the NBA, my lifestyle there afterwards, being able to go on in a career in television and in coaching has because of Michael Jordan making one phone call for me.
Scotty, talk about you go through and play well enough in summer league out in California. You get invited to training camp, but no guaranteed contract. Talk about the approach you took and how nervous you were on a daily basis coming to practice, playing in the games, and the fact that, early on you didn't get to play a lot.
Well, I tell you, Will, it is a difficult situation having to try out. You remember that team was pretty much set. The roster was 11 guys on a guaranteed contract. No one on guaranteed contract got cut back in the day. And there was one spot for about seven of us trying out for that last spot on a 12-man roster. There was only maybe two or three teams in the entire NBA that would carry one extra player. Teams weren't making the money in 90 the way they are, making it now. Everybody carries 15 guys on the roster and rotates them on and off the inactive list and so forth. But so it was nerve-wracking. I wasn't ever fearful of not making the squad. Not to say that I had it sewed up, but I just didn't think I would be able to perform the way I would be necessary to make the squad if I had let fear dominated my motivation or my reason for being there. As you know, that triangle offense it's pretty simple to get the basics down, but there's a lot of nuances, read and react type stuff, of variables, 64 different options that can happen out of those set. So I was fortunate that I understood basketball from a conceptual side of things. So picking up some of the little tweaks and stuff that you had to perform, I picked up that a lot faster than some of the other guys trying out that maybe were in different systems or different programs in college. And it gave me just enough of an advantage, I think, making fewer mistakes, making correct reads, that I impressed the coaching staff long enough to kind of keep me around. But even after I made the team, so to speak, there was no press conference. Jerry Krause or Phil Jackson never came up to me and said, "Congratulations, you're on the squad." I think they were just like, "Well, there's no one else here. I'll just keep playing." That was kind of my welcome to the NBA.
Well, Scotty, you and I had a locker next to each other. We developed a great relationship, but I don't think that this had anything to do with you making the team. I think MJ made the introduction. But, I've learned things about you after you played, from us just talking. I had you on last week on a podcast, and you talked about how you used to go over to Michael's house and you were invited, occasionally for dinner because of that North Carolina connection. But I wanted to know who actually made the invitations to have you come over for dinner, and what did you actually learn from MJ off the floor that you didn't learn from him playing with him?
Well, Will, can I back up just a little bit? I don't want to take up all y'all's time, but it kind of goes back to my sophomore year, right before the first, right on the first day of practice. I got a knock on the door from Dean Smith, and he's delivering bad news that my father had shot my mother and then killed himself. And obviously devastating. I almost sat out that year, but Coach Smith wouldn't let me. So when I got to Chicago, I knew nobody but my teammates. I had nobody to come visit and cook home-cooked meals for me. And if you remember as well, Jordan used to ride me pretty good. I mean,
oh, yeah.
As being the only rookie, being a Carolina guy, I don't care if it was in practice, while we were performing in the locker rooms, on the buses, planes, he was on my case quite a bit. And I took it all in stride for the most part. you know, just as kind of rookie hazing back in the day. I used to have to rack the balls, and those guys would throw them all over the gym or kick them up into the second level on a road arenas. And, you know, leave a little trash into my locker. So he was on me quite a bit. Scottie Pippen and Horace Grant were notorious for, you know, sprinkling crumbs or chips or something like that. I had to get the dust buster out. And I think MJ knew that being the only guy, that could be tough. So he's the one that came to me and said, he didn't invite me over, said, you're coming over. You're coming over for dinner tonight. Juanita's going to cook some spaghetti, and we're going to have a few pops, and we're going to watch, I can't remember, maybe we're watching, you know, another great NBA game or just something on TV in the background while we shot pool. And, you know, George Kohler would be over there, and we just have a really nice time. And I was very appreciative of that. To me, it wasn't just about getting a free meal. It was about, here's this guy who's the best player on the planet. I'm just a lonely guy on a non-guaranteed contract. And like you said, not playing a whole lot. I think it wasn't my first five games without even taking off my warm-up suit. And he's extending me an invitation to try to get the, you know, bond with me and let me know that I'm welcome on the squad.
We're talking with Scott Williams on Sports Radio 670 The Score. And I'm debating whether or not to tell some stories here because I was you and I overlapped in college, Scott. You were at UNC. I was a student at Duke from 87 to 91. So we were only sort of off by about a year there. Not only were there some fantastic Duke-Carolina games in those days, I mean, just really sensational games. Man, I will admit this, and I don't know how it is now, but Durham kind of sucked. So, like, by senior year, we lived, you remember Northgate Mall, we were about halfway down 15501, and sure. we spent all our time on Franklin Street because it was just objectively better. It was just a better place to hang out. The food was better. There was that the chicken place, Time Out. Remember that joint where
Time Out, baby. Billy from Time Out.
Billy, yeah, and Billy, if you thought you went to Duke, he would push you to the back of the line, and he'd give you this look, and you'd get up to the front. You're waiting. You want to get like a chicken and biscuits and all this stuff after a night out of drinking, and Billy would look at you and be like, "You smell like a Dukie. You go to the back of the line."
And, that's great.
And it was fun times. And I remember, I think it was King Rice. There was a case of mistaken identity, and Steve Bucknall was going to punch me in the mouth. And then King Rice stepped in. It was right in front of Players, which was the dance club. King Rice stepped in. He's like, no, Steve, that's not the guy. I'm like, thanks. Good looking out, King. Appreciate that, man.
They saved your grill there, huh?
Yes, he did. Yes, he. That was a wild dude, man.
Yeah. Well, there was great times. Those Duke-Carolina rivalries that you talked about were wonderful. I mean, Carolina kind of been the top dog in the ACC for many years, and Coach K was coming on with some fantastic players. You know, well, I could go, you know, back to some of those other guys like Mark Allery and Johnny Dawkins, but it was really Danny Ferry that kind of got them over that hump. Now they can win against Carolina. And, you know, J.R. Reed, myself, Kenny Smith, we're still trying to hold on to being the top dog, but they were coming on strong. So the animosity between the Duke players and the Carolina players was something like a rivalry that when I got to Chicago, it was Bulls Pistons at that point. So I just kind of went from one great college rivalry to one great NBA rivalry. And I thought, this is what is so great about pro sports, you know. It just having those rivalries, and you have a little extra adrenaline pump every time you would face those teams.
Last question I have, Scott, this is back to what you were saying about what you owe Jordan from that phone call and what it did for you. I've always had this debate with people because people use the term about star players. He makes his teammates better. This guy makes his teammates better. And it's easy to see when you're talking about Magic Johnson or LeBron James, guys who are facilitators first, who make the correct basketball play selflessly in that regard. I always argued that I don't know if Jordan made guys better, but I know he made them open, and I know he made them rich. So do you think he made you better, or was it being around him, drawing defensive attention, and giving you, like you say, the fame and fortune and opportunity above everything else?
He made me better. And I don't know if that's always, he may be a better player in the games. But I know we practiced the way we approached practice, attention to detail, being on that scout team, being so locked into game plans, ready for what things the opposition, our opponents, would do. I was prepared when I stepped on the court. The games were easier for me from that standpoint. Yeah, they're not going to guard Scott Williams when they could come over and double-team Jordan Wood, a big, and he'd slip it underneath their armpit or pass, fire a pass past their ear hole. And all you had to do was catch and score from that point, pretty much. You were wide open either at the rim or open for an easy baseline jump shot. So, yeah, he found guys, in the documentary, the passes to Paxson, the passes to Bill Winnington against the Knicks, the one to Steve Kerr that he knocks down at the free throw line. I mean, he was not afraid to give the ball up at the appropriate time. Now, I still say I was open a few times and he missed me, but that's okay. I want to say he made me a better pro. He made me a better player at the NBA. And obviously, like you talked about, everything that came after that, I was associated with being a winner. I learned the game inside the game from him. I was wanted on teams, whether it be the Sixers, the Bucks, Colangelo calling me after I was about to retire and bringing me back out and saying, hey, come on over here and fix my locker room. I got two guys in Hardaway and Marbury that can't stand each other. You get that reputation around the league. Those kind of things that kept me in the league at least another 4, 5, 6 years, if not more.
This is really fun, Scott. I'm glad we have had a chance to catch up and appreciate you finding the time for us. Thank you.
I appreciate it, too. And I got one bone to pick with you, Will, before I go, because you were talking with Andrea about the fact that it was a business and it was time to break the Bulls up. And a little bit of me understands where you're going with that, but the other side of me says I never played the game for a check. It was a byproduct of what I love to do, and winning was at the top of that. And I don't know if one-year deals work out in those types of scenarios. Hell, I cashed in on an 8-year deal leaving Chicago to go to Philadelphia. But when you're at the top of your game, you've won 6 out of 8. You got three times in a row, and you got the best player on the planet. And you know they didn't buy that franchise for more than $40 million. So even if it would have cost them $20 or $30 million. And lost revenue, the price of the franchise was skyrocketing. If the average price of an NBA franchise was going up at 17% a year, you can only imagine what the Bulls' number would have been. So I don't know what they're valued at today, but it would have been a drop in the bucket compared to what their value is today now to keep that team together. But I understand what it is that you two were both talking about being a business. And who knows if they beat the Pistons or the Spurs, but they would have liked to have had that chance. And that was the biggest thing I loved about the documentary. It showed the disappointment from Jordan that he didn't get a chance to come back and defend that title because they were going to oust Pippen and oust Phil Jackson.
Great stuff, Scott. Thanks a lot for joining us. Continued good
health
to you.
Thank you guys so much for the time. Please give me a call back. Dan, you guys take care. Be safe.
Thanks, Scotty.
That is former Bull Scott Williams with us here on Sports Radio 670. Upcoming in just a moment, Lou Kanellis is going to give us his thoughts on the final installments of The Last Dance. That is straight ahead. After that, Tom Smithberg, the PR assistant, has some stories for us about his time trying to wrangle Dennis Rodman. You saw some of that as well. All that coming your way and more on The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
I know a lot of people didn't think we'd end up back in Grant Park this year. Nobody knows if we're going to be in Grand Park next year. But the one thing I do know is my heart, my soul, my love has always gone to the city of Chicago. And I do know that no matter what happens, my heart, my soul, and my love will still be in the city of Chicago.
I don't know about heart and love and soul, Jim Boylan, but one thing that someone pointed out on Twitter today, the one thing that will always be near the city of Chicago is Michael Jordan's house, because it isn't selling. So that's his legacy, is that giant empty house right off of Route 22 there in Highland Park. Lou Cadellis joins us now of Fox 32 Sports. I'm Dan Bernstein, Will Perdue sitting alongside today on our Last Dance Bulls Monday. Our last one. Lou is on the Alpamonte Ford hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. What's happening, Lou? How are you?
Hey, guys. Sadness. Sadness to see it end.
I think everybody feels that way a little bit because this has just been so nice at just the right time, kind of bringing everybody together. What stood out in these final installments? What resonated with you?
You know, what I was left with, Dan, was Michael having the chance to talk about what happened in his words, not Ahmad Rashad's or Dan Bernstein's or Will Perdue's or Luke Kanellis, but Michael having that chance 22 years later, all right, to tell people exactly what happened. For us at our age, for today's youth, I mean, it's amazing to see how many people of all ages watched these 10 episodes and to see what it took for Michael Jordan and his cast, including Will, to become champions. And, you know, the guy was blessed with the greatest talent, but you still saw how hard he had to work and some of the sacrifices that he made as a son, as a father. I mean, I remember MJ once telling me about how it saddened him that he couldn't even go shopping, Christmas shopping for his kids, and that he'd have to go to Water Tower and they'd put him in a room and they'd bring him potential gifts because of the life he led. And there's just so much to what that man went through over the course of his career and the difficulties that he went through. I'm glad that we were all able to watch it for the last 5 weeks.
How much of the end game did you think was significant? What we heard from Jerry Reinsdorf about what they said it would be suicidal, I think was the word that he used, to try to cobble together a roster of everybody on these outsized, expensive one-year contracts of so many players in decline. You know, a lot of us knew that. I think part of what I've been dealing with and trying to figure out, I guess, and trying to calibrate, Lou, is how much of this really wasn't known to so many people and how much is known and how it changes the way we think about the people involved.
Well, what we learned yesterday, and I knew about it because Michael used to talk about it, when he came back to and played for the Wizards, remember, he was working out with Tim Grover at Hoops the Gym on the West Side, and I was fortunate to be part of those workouts, and he'd have Michael Finley there and Antoine Walker and a bunch of Chicago guys. Even LeBron James showed up once with his mother to work out, and he would constantly talk about not being pushed out of the game but having to leave the game early. So when I saw him last night say, yeah, we're entitled to defend, we could have won 7, not to be able to just try, I just can't accept, I get what he's saying. I'm not so sure, guys, that he would have convinced Scottie Pippen to walk away from $67 million as a free agent to go to Houston or somewhere else. I'm fully convinced that Phil had made his mind up. You can't call Phil after you won the 6th title. The guy was disrespected at the beginning of the season by Jerry when he told him, listen, you can go 82-0 and you're not coming back. You know, Phil Jackson has an ego, too. He's a pretty good coach, and he had great representation with Todd Musburger. And the Lakers were waiting. The Lakers gave him, what, 5 years, $30 million? So, guys, Luke Longley going to Phoenix, Steve Kerr going to San Antonio, Dennis Rodman going off the rails in the finals, and then his career never got back on track. Phil tried in L.A., didn't work. I think he played for the Lakers for a dozen games. He went to Dallas and flamed out in 13 games. I mean, Dennis was unraveling in front of our eyes. As much as I want to sit here and say, yeah, they should have come back and they would have won a 7th title, and Michael Jordan would have convinced them all to to do it one more time, I'm just not sure I believe it, because I think at that point guys had made decisions for what was best for them, not what was best for the fans or Michael.
Lou, you've had the ability to build that trust from Michael back in the day when you were working, because you did a good job of separating your personal life and your professional life. But after these 5 weeks, is there something about Michael that you know that wasn't shown? I know he got to talk and you knew, you learned more about him. Was there something about him that wasn't shown that you wish that maybe they would have revealed?
Great question. Probably, and I know that it was off limits, but probably more about Michael Jordan, the father, that we just didn't see. Mm-hmm. You know, what kind of father he was to Jeffrey and Marcus and Jasmine. I saw this morning that Jasmine actually had to Google her own dad to find out why he was so important, why kids made her dad out to be so important. I wish I would have seen the kids before last night, because I know how important his kids were to him. I saw, you saw, Will, Marcus and Jeffrey on the road. But the world didn't see what kind of father he was. And I can tell you about what a great guy's guy he was. We saw what kind of competitor he was and champion and what it took to become the basketball player he was. But, man, he was a good man. He was a good father as well. And I think he takes it seriously, and I know he definitely takes it seriously with his second family now in Florida, and that's what I wish we would have seen more of.
Lou, before we let you go, and I just want to tell you how much we appreciate you making yourself available all these weeks or being a regular on these Monday shows. It's really been special stuff. I know that you and the Fox 32 Sports crew are all set up for what looks like is going to be a Bears football season, that the NFL is still powering ahead. What do we need to know about your the wall-to-wall Bears coverage that's coming?
Oh, thanks for asking, Dan. I'll tell you what, no one is more excited about Bundesliga soccer going off this weekend without a hitch more than the NFL, and frankly more than us at Fox, because I know that the NFL is keeping an eye on what's going on with soccer, because it's a little bit more of a contact game than NASCAR, obviously. And you know, we've got all four preseason games on Fox this year, beginning in August, middle of August, with the Browns, and who else is on the schedule? San Francisco, Tennessee, and one other game I can't think of. And then the full schedule, and I'm just hoping that it kicks off on time, September 13th. But if it doesn't, I heard from a birdie that if they have to wait a month, wouldn't it be something if they kicked off the NFL season on Thursday night with the Buccaneers at Soldier Field and Tom Brady against the Bears?
Ooh, boy.
On Fox, yes. By the way.
Lou, appreciate it. Best of luck. We will be watching. Thanks again for being generous throughout these Mondays. Appreciate it.
Guys, thanks very much.
Thanks, Lou.
Lou Kanellis of Fox 32 Sports. We got another fun guest coming up next. You saw him last night trying to work Dennis Rodman away from the media out through the back door. That's when I used to shake my fist. Damn you, Tom Smithberg, keeping us from doing our jobs. But he was just doing his. The former Bulls PR guy is going to join us next. Will Perdue, along with me, Dan Bernstein, on the Score.
You got 300 freaking media out there. Dennis blew off practice and he got fined, and he's got nothing to say to nobody, as he would say in his words. So we got to try to sneak him out gate 3.5 while 300 media are in the main hallway in front of the locker room. I don't know if we're going to get that done.
That was a hell of a scene from last night, even though, hey, I resemble that remark. I'm one of those 300 freaking media just trying to do our damn jobs and chase that weirdo down to figure out what he's going to say next. But the guy trying to look out for the best interests of the Bulls players, trying to escape us in that mob, Tom Smithberg, who was a PR assistant with those Bulls teams, a guy we saw every day after the curtain would come down at the Birdo Center. He'd usually come around and at least put a smiling face on that relationship between the Bulls and the assembled reporters. Tom Smithberg joins us now on the Alpamonte Ford Hotline, Alpamonte Ford in Melrose Park. How you been, man? What's up?
I am doing great, Dan. Great to be with you. Wow. Hasn't this been fun, these 10 episodes over the last 5 weeks? This has been so much fun to go back 22-plus years. What great memories.
What's most fun for you? What do you enjoy seeing or remembering the most?
I'll tell you what. I am just so glad that this behind-the-scenes footage is finally being broadcast to the world. I remember working with NBA Entertainment every day for 9 months on all the behind-the-scenes footage since the start of that 97-98 season. And the whole concept was, is this going to be, you know, an intimate kind of home movie look at this team? And obviously, 22 years later, it evolved into the grand, big, global story that was the story of the Bulls and Michael Jordan during the whole time. But it's fascinating to watch how the project has changed in 20 years. But so great to see the footage, the crisp film footage, which we get to see in HD now in 2020. But you have to remember, back at the time, there was standard definition television. We weren't watching film in high def. So it's so great just to see the quality of the images, the stories, the human element. I could go on and on, but boy, you and I, we went through plenty of wars together, waiting for those curtains to open and figure out who's going to interview what and when, right?
Well, yeah, but it was people don't realize how available Michael Jordan was. That's the other thing now, too, is that for a guy of international global standing, what was it, twice a week? I mean, he would just be there, and he would answer all of our questions a couple of times a week outside of before and after games. I mean, it really is his availability remains remarkable to me.
It really is. Besides after every single game, which was something of a kind of NBA responsibility and a policy, I was amazed that Michael, you never knew exactly what day of the week or what practice it might be. But, you know, the media and you and your colleagues were always very patient because you knew he was going to show up and you knew he was going to stay and answer every last question, you know, from the good ones to the stupid ones. We saw a lot of both. And his patience was really incredible. And that was it was fun to go back and see some of those, again, some of the behind the scenes footage of the media scrum and how everyone was chasing him from cars to buses. And we were dealing with that every single day, but I thought the film did a great job of showing that side of Michael and the whole team really being available to the media, because it was a different media environment back then.
Tom, you don't have to suck up to Dan. You no longer work for the Bulls. It's okay. Dan was one of those guys after games at the old stadium that would be banging. Oh, I'm just kidding, but we all knew how these guys wanted that 10 minutes to go by as quick as possible, because the rule was 10 minutes after the game, you would open the locker room. But you guys couldn't open the locker room because Michael would stand there and go, not ready, not ready. And then these guys would be banging on the door outside.
It was amazing. It was the ultimate war. When was that door going to be open? And Will, you know who was boss of the whole operation. It was number 23. That door didn't get open until he was comfortable and or dressed as impeccably as he was. But I will say this, a couple times I may have opened that door a little too early, and I got a couple shoes thrown at me or some comments on the bus. Hey, that's just another working day. That was par for the course. You had to deal with that as we saw in the film.
Well, Tom, Rodman, how difficult was it on the road for you guys to try to protect Michael, especially coming in and out of the hotels, because there were so many people waiting, but then so many people trying to find ways to sneak into the hotels on the road?
Yeah, I'm really glad the film showed Michael's relationship with his security guards and Gus in that last episode and his whole crew that really protected him, especially in that last season, 97-98, they were the ultimate buffer and to help the whole team, help me as a staffer trying to be a liaison with the media, as well as with the fans who would just gather around every single hotel. We might get in at 4 o'clock in the morning on the East Coast after a home game in Chicago, and there'd be young kids out there with parents expecting autographs when we pull into Atlanta or Miami or New York. And it was just you felt bad for some of these people because they're only going to get, you know, 3 seconds to view, you know, the players or Michael going through. So, but really it was Michael's security crew was really a great asset to have and kept that buffer and made my job a lot easier. That's for sure.
We saw you trying to find a way to have Dennis Rodman avoid the massive media. And I've tried to explain to people, and I wrote a column about this too, just what a nightmare it was to cover Dennis Rodman. And it's one of the I always say I'll never, ever complain about my job. But the only things that I really didn't like, one of my least favorite things I've ever done was have to cover Dennis Rodman. That and the cigar smoke that was constantly around this team. It's the only thing I didn't like about covering the Bulls. So it had to also be that way from a PR perspective, just because you never knew where he was, when he was where, what he was going to say. I'm sure your phone could ring at any hour and say, oh, we've got another Rodman bomb that we got to deal with here. So I don't imagine it was a whole lot of fun for you dealing with it either.
No, and you couldn't plan anything. It was just you were reacting to the moment, and anything could happen any day. I'm glad you brought it up, the Rodman bomb. I was looking back on some of my memories and notes. There was a game in New Jersey, and this wasn't covered in the documentary, but in January, we're staying at the Sheraton Meadowlands in New Jersey. No one really wants to stay at the Sheraton Meadowlands in New Jersey. So Dennis, the night before that game, goes to Atlantic City, and he doesn't come back. And I get a phone call from Dwight Manley, Dennis's agent, at 4:45, and the bus is leaving at 5. And Dwight tells me, tell Phil Jackson, Dennis is upside down at here in Atlantic City, and he's not going to make the game tonight. So that was a fun walk down the hallway to Phil Jackson's room and tell him that. But here's what's amazing. The media world is so different. Phil hatched a plan that I helped execute, which was, let's not say anything. So he didn't even tell the team. We got on the bus. We went to the arena. Everyone's warming up. And finally, you know, like Bill Wennington and Judd Bush, they come over and say, hey, have you seen Dennis? And I just, no, I haven't seen Dennis. So it didn't even get to the arena until game time that Dennis wasn't there and someone finally had reported him missing in Atlantic City. So, but that just shows you the greatness of Phil Jackson's leadership, that he isolated the team from the bad news and focused on the game, the Bulls won that game, and it wasn't until afterwards where Phil finally addressed Dennis's disappearance. But just a great example of his leadership, and that was a Rodman bomb that could never happen today because everyone would know on social media by, you know, 11 p.m. the night before where Dennis was and exactly what he's doing. So that was an example of dealing with a Rodman bomb in the moment, and you just had to think quick on your toes. And sometimes by doing nothing, we were doing everything to kind of protect the team and protect the focus of that game. That was a good memory.
Well, Tom, how did you learn, like in last night's documentary, they talk about how Dennis went and did the WWE wrestling thing and just disappeared. But at the same time, Phil turned that around on the media and said, well, that's a distraction to you guys. I know as a former player, I know how pissed MJ was. I know how pissed Phil was. Yeah. How did you guys sit down and turn that into what you guys were hoping was a non-story just from the player's perspective?
Yeah, and that's, again, another case of Phil's leadership by taking the responsibility to be the spokesman of the team. I can remember on that that practice at the United Center, and by the way, of that video clip, the film clip, think of the irony in sneaking Dennis Rodman out of the back of the locker room up gate 3.5, which was the media gate, to avoid 300 media. I mean, just the irony in that's hilarious. Like, the whole idea of using gate 3.5 is for the media, and yet there's Dennis racing out to escape it all, which is hilarious. And we had the strict instructions by Phil, whatever you do, do not let Dennis talk to the media. So that's why we, you know, I secretly grabbed him and tossed him around the back of the locker room, or, you know, and guided him up to the street. And sometimes that was the best PR move at the time, even though the bomb was left on the court and Phil had to deal with the questions. Michael had to deal with it. And you're right, Will, the players were really pissed. And that's where those things had to be cleared up in the locker room before the game. But oddly enough, that was before, I believe, game four of the 98 finals, which Dennis sealed with a couple key free throws at the end of the game. So he showed up when it counted the most, and I thought that was pretty cool. And one other note, everyone's talking about load management, you know, in the NBA today. Dennis played 80 out of 82 games that season. So a little Vegas trip here or Atlantic City trip here, that's his version of load management, right?
Talking with Tom Smithberg on Sports Radio 670 The Score. It's great to reminisce and hear this stuff. And, you know, just seeing how young you looked. You know, we were just kids, man. It's amazing how young we were when this was all going on.
Hey, and I'm glad you brought up the curtain. You know, I can remember you and a couple of your media colleagues poking your head behind the curtain, only hearing from Jerry Krause about 2 seconds later, grunting at you guys. At first, it was just a string, and then it was a curtain, and, you know, then it became a wall, right? So,
you know, Jerry caught me
one time.
Yeah, he didn't lower it all the way one time. He left like an inch, and I literally was lying on my stomach watching practice, and Jerry was fuming when somebody's worried. I don't know who ratted on me, but word got back upstairs that Bernstein's lying on his stomach watching practice. So, hey, we do what we had to do.
It was fantastic. Great memories.
Appreciate it, Tom. Thanks a lot, man.
Thanks, Tom.
You betcha. Great to be with you guys.
That's Tom Smithberg, one of our many terrific guests today, along with Lou Kanellis, Scott Williams, and Andrea Kramer. Will Perdue, this has really been terrific. And again, I can't thank you enough that when all is said and done and we get back to whatever our new normal is, this is going to be really part of my my good memories of some of the home broadcasting have been these Mondays. So just thanks so much.
Well, Dan, thank you. And I also want to say thank you so much to Jay and Ray for all your work, the pre-show calls at 8 a.m. And also thanks to Mitch Rosen for allowing me to do this. I thoroughly enjoyed this, but I'm basically leaving these 5 weeks with a lasting memory of Dan Bernstein on the floor watching practice going commando just to try to get a glimpse of what's going on the other side of the curtain.
That's what they made us do, you know. We were desperate for any information. If you're going to make it that difficult, you better believe I'm going to take advantage of it if you leave that curtain up literally an inch. That's what we did. Will, I know you'll be in town once again soon, but hit them straight. And, you know, get that index down.
You got it.
Thanks to Jay Zawoski. Thanks to Ray Diaz. Thanks to everybody for listening and checking in with us through the various modalities you do. Wash your hands. Stay socially distant. Wear your mask. Wear your damn mask over your nose and mouth. If you don't, you're not wearing a mask. Listen to doctors, and only listen to people who listen to doctors. So we will have all kinds of stuff tomorrow. We got to get to the baseball stuff. We got to get to the football stuff. There was actual sports going on as well yesterday. So we'll branch out a bit tomorrow. But keep it here for Lawrence Holmes. We will talk to you tomorrow. Bye.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.